everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we go down the retro journey with Sandra. Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, it's a memorable episode of Retro Raw this week. I mean, who can forget that classic moment in WWF history where Ivory faced Sable?
Well, it's funny that you know you mock it a little bit, but this actually for me is a pretty historic episode because
no, it is.
Yeah,
what people remember.
What they did here is basically give away what was supposed to be a WrestleMania main event like a year early on Raw, which we will get to. The decision to have Paul White, after he was signed to a multi-million-dollar contract, be pinned clean 3 weeks into his run by Steve Austin on Raw.
Yeah, it's a baffling decision, for sure.
Oh, no, 5 weeks, because it was Valentine's Day Massacre, 14th of February to March 22nd. Yeah, so, you know, it's funny because I think sometimes obviously, you know, there's maybe rose-tinted glasses to your childhood and to what you watch, but I remember even as a kid going like, what? Like, why would you, even if you're not like, even if Big Show's not panning out the way you want it to, like, why would you do this? Like, it just makes no sense at all.
I mean, I guess to me it makes a little bit more sense. We'll get to it in the main event, but like, Big Show does not look like he wants to be there in any sense of the word, right? Like, he's terrible. And I guess they were maybe like, okay, this guy's terrible, and we are just going to start to not use him very much. I mean, they've done a lot better with Mark Henry, right? Like, Mark Henry has not been the greatest professional wrestler, but with Mark Henry, they have, you know, they've given him different character stuff, and some of it's been atrocious. But, you know, like, they've found other things for him before he, you know, he hasn't really just been, like, losing constantly or anything like that. Whereas with Big Show, it's, yeah, I mean, it's baffling in one way, but in the sense of, like, him being so terrible and ineffective, I guess I kind of get it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, just for me, I've never understood, and whether it's WWF, WCW, TNA, I've just never understood kind of, like, throwing money away like that. Like, even if you don't like the guy.
No, it's baffling.
Like, it's just like, what? Anyway, yeah, what was interesting is on this same week, though, Paul White had been found innocent for assault charges for an incident the previous June after a show at the Nassau Coliseum where he punched 29-year-old Robert Sawyer at a Marriott.
The judge oh, really? Saw, I did not know about this.
The judge saw the videotape of the incident where Sawyer tried to provoke Paul White into a fight, and Sawyer's like 6'6", so he's like quite a big guy. And he'd been trying to pick a fight with Kevin Nash as well, and the ruling was that Paul White had been acting in self-defense.
This guy sounds like an idiot. Why are you trying to pick a fight with Paul White and Kevin Nash?
Of all the people to pick.
Like, of all the people to choose. I mean, like, picking fights with professional wrestlers is not a good idea in general, because a lot of them will beat you up. But Paul White and Kevin Nash especially, they are very large gentlemen. Like, what the fuck are you thinking, Robert, whoever you are?
Robert Sawyer. Sawyer,
not the most intelligent man I've ever heard of.
I should say that over the weekend, they had been spinning on, like, Shotgun and Heat and all that kind of stuff, that this episode of Raw was going to include the biggest match in Raw history, which was going to be Austin versus Paul White. Because, you know, it's a monster giant guy who's just come in and, you know, 3 weeks in, he's facing off against Steve Austin. What always kind of makes me laugh is that there's the famous story Dave Meltzer has told a few times about, and you've probably heard this story before, like, that Meltzer would have phone calls with Vince McMahon in the mid-90s, like maybe like 96 or something, and mm-hmm. it would always be Vince saying, oh, you know, if we had the Giant, we would know how to book him. Like, we wouldn't make the mistakes that WCW make of just having him be just another guy. And you're like, 3 weeks in. 3 weeks in, Vince.
Baffling. But I mean, I guess it speaks to, I mean, something that we've talked about before, WWF not knowing how to handle big monster men, right? And how to book them and how to book them properly. I guess they did, like, Sid in 96 was doing pretty well, but then, like, after WrestleMania, it all just kind of fell off a cliff. And a lot of that, of course, is due to Sid's backstage antics and not showing up and being Sid. But I mean, it just kind of seems like throughout the history of this company, and the more we watch Retro Raw, the more I realize it is pervasive in the history of the company, and not just since I've been watching wrestling, they don't handle big monster men very well.
They do not.
Like, look what they're doing with Braun Strowman right now. They had such a sure thing with Braun Strowman, and what even has happened?
So I'm going to quickly take you through Heat, which was the night before. There's a lot going on, so I'm going to try and get through this as fast as I possibly can and listen to Finn and I talk fully about it on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, where we just have a ball like being in Vince Russo's brain and seeing what he can do for 43 minutes to just like make you feel like you're on LSD. So the corporation came out to start the show, minus Paul White and Vince McMahon. The Rock declares he's in charge tonight, and given that he's the Great One, he can do what he wants. He's talking smack about everyone in the corporation, calling them all losers that are riding the Rock's coattails. Specifically says that Boss Man's hard time is a bunch of crap. And tonight the nightstick will be shoved up his rectum because the Rock is booking himself against the big Boss Man. Shane's trying to talk sense into some sort of paranoid Rock who just seems to be losing his mind. We get a hardcore title match with Billy Gunn and Al Snow. Hardcore Holly ends up getting involved, and Gunn retains in like 4 minutes, which is obviously leading to now, instead of being Road Dogg, Al Snow, and Bob Holly at WrestleMania, it's going to be with Billy Gunn. Test tries to make peace with The Rock backstage, but Rock calls him Barbie and tells him to go and fix him a sandwich. We get a look at.
What?
I know. I know. We get a look at X-Pac. Mean Street Posse tells a story about the fights that Shane has been in, including when Willie Green and Shane took on 20 guys in a bar fight, and Shane and Willie Green won the bar
Who
fight.
do they think they are, Haku?
We got an IC title match with Road Dogg and Ken Shamrock, but of course Val Venus got involved, Goldust came out and got involved. So again, now promoting the other four-way that was supposed to involve the other outlaw. Maybe not the highest point in the Hardy Boys' career when they were defeated in a handicap match by Dr. Death Steve Williams, where at one point,
What?
and at one point,
That happened.
Dr. Death hurls Jeff Hardy into Matt, and it looks like he murders him with a German suplex. So yes, I mean, now that you see it, you're like, if you had done that German suplex to Steve Austin with his neck injuries, I think he would be dead.
Yeah, that's not great.
Godfather versus Triple H was a match from Sondra's Dreams. Triple H is trying to get
Throw
some
it in the bin.
action from the ladies, but they do not work for free. So the ladies refuse him because, you know, he's not paying up. Godfather attacks
They
him.
don't work for free. Isn't that the whole Godfather thing? Is that he offers them up for free? So are we saying like he is paying them then?
No,
Have we
but
figured
he,
out
no,
the economics of the Godfather?
but he did not offer them to Triple H, is the point.
Ah.
Godfather then attacks Triple H for him trying to disrespect his ladies. And in the end,
Some character consistency for Triple H, actually. Remember when he used to have ladies and handcuff them to the ring?
Triple H gets the win in like 2.5 minutes. Paul White arrives at the building. And then the main event is The Rock versus the Big Boss Man, where Rock is got control of the match. He then stops to do commentary for himself before the Boss Man fights back, and then the lights go out. The Ministry of Darkness runs in to attack Boss Man while Rock casually grabs his belt and leaves, and the Undertaker stares him down at the top of the ramp, and we're out of time. That's Heat, ladies and gentlemen.
Sounds like a thing. Sounds like, why is The Rock fighting the big boss man? They're both in the corporation. I'm so
Because The
confused.
Rock is paranoid because he's convinced that Vince McMahon is and Paul White are in cahoots and conspiring against him.
Ah.
So let's get to this episode of Raw. It's the go home
I
show,
got nothing.
the go home show for WrestleMania 15. Steve Austin arrives at the arena. He's got a Coors Light truck. So the McMahons came out with The Rock.
My
Vince.
favorite part is that Austin sees the driver, right? And the driver's like, "Hey, Stone Cold Steve Austin, big fan, right?" And Stone Cold Steve Austin's like, "Hey, you know, how's it going? Coors Light, awesome." Which is, I mean, it's a terrible beer, but whatever. Steve Austin likes beer. And the driver's like, "Can I have your autograph?" And Austin's like, "I'm a little busy right now, but I got something better for you. Like, can't you just take 2 seconds to sign the autograph?" I mean, obviously he gets the gentleman involved later on, which is pretty cool, but I was like, that's mean that he wouldn't sign an autograph. Like, he has 2 seconds. He just was gonna go stare at the monitor for a while anyway.
What a heel. So Vince is is in the ring with Shane and The Rock. The fans hate them. They are booing them to death every time Vince tries to get in the mic. Shane Shane challenges X-Pac to a street fight out of the arena, while Vince promises that The Undertaker will be busy with the Boss Man and others when he arrives. Vince speculates that Steve Austin is working with The Undertaker to distract him from his goal of making sure The Rock remains in control of the WWF title. Rock then talks smack about Austin. Vince says that The Rock will referee tonight's Austin Big Show main event. Mankind interrupts and proposes that he face The Rock and that the winner referee the main event. The Rock initially says no, but then Mankind produces a document from Commissioner Shawn Michaels that books a match between them, with the winner being the referee anyway. And then once Mankind's finished, Steve Austin arrives in his Coors Light truck, drives it to the ring, gets on top of the truck, says he will win at WrestleMania, and then sprays all the heels with beer. It's funny, like, we talked at the top of the show about how, Austin pins the Big Show clean in 3 weeks, but that is not the remembered moment. The remembered moment is obviously Austin with the beer truck, spraying all the heels with beer. Vince doing like a front stroke as if he's swimming in the beer is tremendous. This is like an iconic moment, so I guess you're seeing it in context. What did you make of the opening segment that ended with the heels being doused in poor quality beer?
It is poor quality beer for sure. But the opening segment was great. Like, it accomplished a lot. And obviously, like, it was very long. I mean, this opening segment is almost 20 minutes long. It's too much talking all at the beginning of the show. It's hard to pay attention to a 20-minute promo with all of this stuff going on. But there are characters interrupting each other. There's a sort of consistency there. One of the things I realized watching this opening segment, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, and you're just going to gloat, but like, the presence of Shawn Michaels still being out there makes the Retro Raw Vince shenanigans work a little bit better for me than the current Vince shenanigans in 2019, because I think that's been part of my issue with like Vince just kind of coming out and like subverting all the rules and all that kind of stuff on the current shows, is that there's no one to challenge him and there's no reason for him to ever be taken down, right? Whereas when Mick Foley comes out here and produces a document and saying that he talked to Commissioner Shawn Michaels, because if you remember the stipulation, Shawn Michaels still has control over all of the members of the roster except for Stone Cold Steve Austin. So he can logically make that match between Mankind and The Rock for this evening to be the special guest referee between Austin and Paul White, right? So, I mean, I bless Mankind. I don't know why he's so obsessed with being a referee, but that's his goal and that's his life dream, and we are going to support him in it, right? Like, we want him to be a referee. He made a shirt and everything. So that's lovely. And I think having Shawn Michaels out there as kind of a check and balance to Vince McMahon helps the consistency of the show a little bit for me, and it makes it seem like there is a way to kind of counter all of his like rule changing bullshit. This moment for Austin in context, I think, was sorely needed, because I've been a lot less interested in Steve Austin in recent weeks, and we've talked about it on the show. Steve Austin has been kind of in the background of his own story, right? Because you've had so much dissension between The Rock and Paul White, and The Rock and the corporation, and Vince McMahon is all over the place. And you know that Vince McMahon is all over the place because he's so angry at Austin, but Austin really hasn't even been around. And I know a lot of that is because he can't wrestle that often. He's injured. He's going through a lot of stuff. Like, it makes sense backstage why they've kept him off the show. But I think Austin, for me personally, needed a moment where he felt as interesting and as over as the crowd seems to find him. Because the crowd in 1999 is still all completely behind Austin. Every time he shows up, it's a massive pop. But I think storytelling-wise, it was getting a little bit stagnant, and it felt like Steve Austin versus The Rock was almost the secondary story. Whereas Steve Austin coming out here with a beer truck, being badass, awesome, cool Steve Austin with vehicles again, right? Like, that's the Steve Austin I like. That's the charismatic Steve Austin. This was Steve Austin who showed up and looked motivated and looked like he cared. And it's not that Steve Austin's been like looking like he's been, just kind of sailing through things. He's not Paul White, but I just think he hasn't had a lot to do recently. And so giving him this to do, I think, was great. And it did make me more interested in The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And especially, I like the fact that Austin called out Rock and was like, he seemed very serious about it. He was like, take your glasses off. I want to look in your eyeballs as I'm talking to you. And he said, you're going to want to pay attention to this. This is serious. You're not going to want to just spout off catchphrases. You're not just going to want to, blow this off, because The Rock is a kind of a wanky character who doesn't take much seriously, right? Like, he's all about Know Your Role Boulevard and Jabroni Drive and the SmackDown Hotel and all the things that kind of irk me about The Rock. Stone Cold Steve Austin is calling out here and saying, that's all you're about. You're all surface, you're all flash or whatever, but you're going to need to take this seriously because this is going to be a fight and I'm walking out of WrestleMania with that title. And what does The Rock do? He comes back with catchphrases. He comes back and says he's going to check his ass into the SmackDown hotel and blah, blah, blah. And it's the classic Rock shtick. And for it to be interrupted by Steve Austin just spraying beer on them. And then the brilliant sell job by Vince and Shane and all of them. Because, like, Shane McMahon in the background here, too, has been kind of brilliantly a prick because he's wearing, like, the oversized suit jacket and he always makes sure to, like, show his title, right? Like, he's always has his hand on his hips so that you can see his title so prominently because he is the European champion and he so deserves it, right? Oh, he's so irritating. So yeah, I think all the characters were really good here, and this is what I needed to get more interested in Steve Austin again. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about some stuff that happens in the next few months involving Steve Austin, and I think he actually, one of your complaints of him has been that he's not likable enough in some ways, and he doesn't do things that you would hope that a babyface would do. And I think that he has a few character moments in sort of April, May, June where he really does step up as the babyface, and I think that's a good thing. And like you said, I mean, this is the go home for WrestleMania 15. You're trying to sell WrestleMania. I think that for a while you've kind of gotten away from it being Austin versus Rock, which is really what you're trying to sell. So I think they did a good job here in kind of bringing it back to that and bringing it back to being that's what it's about. And even at the time, this moment was great then, it's great now. Like, there's, and the thing is, like, again, Vince is just excellent here. He's just great. The over the top dramatic, like, Amdram facial expression to the truck initially, to him swimming in the beer, because like Rock is ridiculous, but Rock is Rock kind of takes himself quite seriously. He's like a
Yes,
he.
he takes himself quite seriously, but he like shuts down everyone else. You can tell he's like he almost seems to have that insecurity where he's still Rocky Maivia in his head, and he's like, no, now that I've reached the pinnacle, and now that I am like this, posh character or whatever, I need to put everyone else down so that no one else can touch me because I don't want to be back there again. I'm just like
And
putting internal motivation into The Rock, but it makes it more interesting for
yeah,
me.
but there could be an element to that, whereas with Vince is just like, I'll do whatever. Like, I will be ridiculous. I will swim in beer for this segment.
Well, and commentary selling this too, right? Like Jerry Lawler is just apoplectic on commentary. It's beer, it's beer. Ah, that's a $3,000 suit. Michael Cole's like, it was a $3,000 suit. And and just how upset Vince looks at ruining his suit. And then later on in the show, obviously, like he has a wardrobe change, which is not really very effective at making him look like a corporate businessman. But it's hilarious. Like he's selling that he's had to change his outfit.
We go from the opening segment, we then see Deborah getting ready for the next match. We then see one of my favorite things. It's so good because it's so bad. Jim Ross and Dr. Death at a local frat party as part of JR's war. And like every week when we see Dr. Death, and like if the idea is that Dr. Death's supposed to get over, he just looks like an angry dad. Like he looks like he's.
Especially at a frat party, they look so out of place.
Do
I
you know who he
loved
reminded me
this.
of? He reminded
Who?
me of. Do you remember the guy who played the coach in Saved by the Bell the college years?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Bob or something? Like, whatever
Oh
his name
my
was.
gosh,
He
yes.
reminds me of that guy. Like, former football player. He's here to, like, keep the kids in check. That's
Or
Dr.
like
Death.
Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah. I don't feel like we're giving Dr. Death the kind of character comparisons they were looking for at the time, but.
Probably not. Probably not. But that's definitely how he comes across. Is like because I was seeing him as more like an Uncle Rico situation because he and JR, like Jim Ross at a frat party, is just not something I expected on this episode of Raw. But it was a delight because they're just these drunk college assholes sitting around them, and JR is just sitting there like, I mean, like he doesn't really know what's going on. Like, why am I at a frat party? But okay, I'm here and we're gonna watch Raw. And it also made me laugh because if they're trying to get JR over as a heel, which it didn't seem like they were trying to do here, this is not the way to do it because he's just having fun with a bunch of frat guys and talking about how excited he is to watch Raw with the people. Like, how is that supposed to be heel behavior?
It's great. It's just one of those things. You don't think you need JR at a frat party, but you do.
But you do.
Tag titles are on the line with Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart defending against, excuse me, Gangrel and Edge. Christian's there. He's not wrestling. He's on the outside.
He's
So
not supposed to wrestle.
Yeah.
But then he does.
But then he does. The brood that starts their sort of free bird rule. Tim White's fine with it, no problem. The public enemy run in when Owen has Edge and the sharpshooter, but Owen and Jeff and the brood then join forces to beat up the public enemy because they all hate the public enemy. Okay. And then the lights go out, and then Deborah gets a bloodbath, and what is going on here? I mean, it's chaos and it's bonkers.
I don't know what's happening in this match. And commentary doesn't know what's happening in this match either because it's supposed to be Edge and Gangrel. And I remember when the match started, I was like, that's an odd choice. Why would you have Edge and Gangrel wrestling when you could have Edge and Christian wrestling and it's going to be a far better match, right? Because Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett versus Edge and Christian sounds like a great match to me. And Owen Hart versus Edge and Gangrel sounds like a less great match to me because Gangrel wrestling is not really his strength, right? His strength is being a vampire and putting blood on people. So, yeah, that was just kind of baffling. But then in the middle, it was like Gangrel and Christian decided to employ twin magic. But it's Christian and Gangrel. Like, I know that they're dressed the same, but they do not look the same at all. And so there's a moment where I think Edge is distracting Tim White, and Christian just comes into the match in place of Edge. And Edge goes to the outside and takes up the place where Christian was standing next to the apron. And Michael Cole on commentary is just like, Christian's not supposed to be in this match. And Jerry Lawler's just angry. He's like, he's not supposed to be wrestling. What's going on? And Tim White's just like, this seems perfectly logical, even though Gangrel and Edge have both been in this match. You can't Freebird rule in the middle of a match, but apparently you can in 1999. So Christian, like, is in the match for a little while and then tags Edge on the opposite corner of where the Brood are. And then Edge is just back in the match. And Tim White's like, yep, this checks out. This is totally logical. And then, like, Gangrel's wrestling later, too. It's like, none of this makes any sense. And then when Public Enemy come out, Tim White doesn't stop the match then either. He's just like, no, this seems fine. This seems like a thing that can happen. The match never actually ended, as far as I could tell. I don't think there was ever a winner or a loser or even a bell ring to like count people out or deal with the shenanigans. Deborah getting a bloodbath was pretty fun. She looked like she enjoyed it though. Like she almost had a smile on her face, which I mean, who could blame her? Like I think it'd be super fun to get a bloodbath. But yeah, so she's on the outside and, you know, just kind of completely covered, and she was wearing all white, so it just made it that much more dastardly that they ruined her nice outfit and all that kind of stuff. But just this was absolutely a shambles. Like, yes, there was chaos and chaos is fun, but you can't just have other performers enter the match and be okay with it, and then the match never ends. Like, what's even the point? This is supposed to be a title match. Like, I don't know why the Brood are getting a title match, but it's a title match. Like, shouldn't it be treated with a little bit more seriousness?
And also, why did the public enemy think this is a good idea? This is a
Yeah.
good idea. We will anyway. It's a whole thing.
I mean, who were the public enemy trying to attack? Were they trying to attack Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett?
I think it's the brood because the brood bloodbathed them.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay,
But
so.
yeah, so obviously the Brood are gonna go against them. But I mean, they did face Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett last week, right? Because they got the tag title match, and I was just baffled by it. So yeah, I mean, they're not friends with anyone in this match. How did they think this was gonna go well for them? I'm not sure what they were trying to accomplish. The Public Enemy are terrible,
Oh,
in summary.
they're. I mean, they're like worse than terrible. They. Anyway, so I like to think that I can remember pretty much most things from like wrestling that I've watched in the past. However, I do not have any memory of Lucas, the backstage interviewer.
Lucas, I meant to bring him up last week because he interviewed, I think, like Billy Gunn or someone like that. But yeah, Lucas is back this week. This like tiny human who looks like he's like, I don't know, 18 maybe. He looks very young. Like I would definitely card him for alcohol sales. And Lucas is trying to interview the New Age Outlaws, and it just does not go very well for Lucas.
And I was trying to find any sort of information on him that I could because I just don't know anything about him. So all I could find was a Bleacher Report article which had him in it, and all that it said about him. Where was it? Like there was a Bleacher Report article that kind of referenced him, and now I can't find it, obviously. But it was basically like there was a guy called Lucas. We couldn't find anything about him.
That makes me fascinated. I want to know Lucas's story.
I feel like he's maybe like the son of somebody. Do you know what I mean? Like he was like the son of somebody, and they were like, let's give this guy a job.
Because it's not like he's well dressed or anything like that. He's not even wearing like just a WWF shirt. Like when Michael Cole would do backstage interviews, a lot of times he would either be in a suit or he'd be in like WWF shirt or, you know, business casual kind of look. Like Lucas just looks like he's rolled up to go to rolled out of bed to like go to class. I mean, he's not like in his pajamas or anything, but you know, like he, I'm baffled by Lucas. I
Yeah,
want to know more.
I'm trying. Is there anything I can find on him? No, there's
Like
not.
the next time you know, interview Goldust or Billy Gunn or someone, be like, so Lucas, I need to talk to you about Lucas. Who was this guy?
Yeah, so like Goldust, who like can't remember certain parts of his career, but
Be
like,
like,
can
but
you
this
remember the
backstage
one
interviewer
guy
called
for like
Lucas.
2 weeks who did interviews? So then we get Vince McMahon's telling the Stooges to get him some coffee, which we'll come back to in a second.
No, but the Lucas interview, wasn't this the New Age Outlaws thing?
Yes, where they're basically going to be facing each other in a match, title for title, and they want to take
Which,
each other's belts.
why? Why are they
Makes no
facing each other
sense.
title for title? They haven't had dissension. There's no reason or setup for this. Like, it doesn't make
I
sense
feel
to
like
me.
this is one of those things where they just, you know how like sometimes we go, okay, so like for example, as much as I don't think it's right to have Austin beat the Big Show clean, I understand that if you're in a ratings war, you want to have something to hook people in. So you have this big main event. That makes sense. I get that. But like, I don't really. I mean, I guess they were like, okay, let's have Road Dogg face Billy Gunn. People will watch that. It's title for title. But then, like, there's nothing's built it up, and then it's a no contest.
Yeah, so I mean it doesn't, I mean it had to be a no contest, right? Like obviously it had to be no contest, but like even just this interview was so strange because they were being so like dickish to each other, right? Like Road Dogg saying that he was gonna take the title from Billy Gunn, and Billy Gunn just being like, "Look, I'm gonna take the Intercontinental Championship and the Hardcore Championship, and I want it all." And Road Dogg's like, "I'm awesome," and he called him Mr. A double crooked letter at one point, and I forget. Oh, he said, "Before you take A double L, Mr. A double crooked letter," and he was trying to be clever. But I mean, they seemed really bitchy toward each other here, and I thought they were pals again. Like I thought that was the whole point of them coming back as the New Age Outlaws and like being friends, and now they're just not.
It made no sense, and then they had the match, which goes like 3 minutes. And I think the problem with the match was like nothing had been built up for it. And like, if so, I know you're not a fan of the New Age Outlaws, but say you are a fan of the New Age Outlaws, right? So I was a fan of the New Age Outlaws when I was a kid. Like, I like them both. So like, who am I supposed to get behind? Like,
Right.
what's the impetus for me as a fan? So I like Road Dogg, who's the IC champ. I like Billy Gunn, who's a hardcore champ. Do you want to force me to choose? Like
It
I
just sort
don't.
of waters down your enjoyment of it if you don't know who to get behind, right? And it's not like it's going to be a match that's just such incredible quality that you're just like hooked, right? Because it's Road Dogg versus Billy Gunn, and Road Dogg, bless him and his, you know, dancey pelvic thrusting knee drops or whatever, is not the most compelling in-ring talent. So it's, you know, it's fine, but it's like it's a 3-minute intercontinental, like title versus title should be a bigger deal. And if they want ratings, then it seems like it should be something that they promoted a little bit before this, right? Like advertise that leading up to Raw. I don't know if they did or not, but I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. And then obviously it was a big like schmozzy disqualification finish because all of the members of the Hardcore Championship match and the Intercontinental Championship match decided to just come out and beat everyone up, which kind of is the way it had to go. Like you couldn't really have one of them win this match. It had to be either a double count out or some sort of disqualification or something, because it's not like you want to combine the Intercontinental and Hardcore title reigns at this point in time. So I think that took part of the drama out of it for me too, was that I was like, neither one of them is going to win. Like I just saw the words disqualification in neon across my screen, essentially, right? Like you knew that it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think it worked. So they did the interview, they did the match. I don't think it worked. It ended up being a double DQ because Al Snow, Goldust, basically all the contenders for the two matches run out, and then that's kind of meant to make you want to see the two title matches. So
I guess, but it
okay.
didn't really like it didn't really do much to build anything. It just, I don't know, whatever.
Then we had the Stooges trying to get Vince McMahon's coffee, but suddenly they drop the coffee and beg for mercy. And we turn around when we come back from the break. We see it's footage of the Legion of Doom with Paul Ellering beating up the Stooges to get revenge for last week's Legion of Stooge performance. So, under return of Legion of Doom, any thoughts?
Okay, so what? Like, what is happening with the Legion of Doom? Why are they constantly like breaking up and getting back together? And like, apparently, all it took was Hawk like getting pushed off a Titantron to bring the family back together? Question mark. Like, why? Just why is this?
I mean,
Is my
this
question.
return only lasts a week, and then that's the last you ever see the Legion of Doom in a sort of full role in WWF.
Okay, because I can't say that I was clamoring for the Legion of Doom to return. I know the last time we saw the Legion of Doom and the last time we had Legion of Doom stories, they were just so incredibly atrocious that, I mean, I had a lot of goodwill toward the Legion of Doom. I stand by them being kind of awesome in like 96, 97. Whenever they came in, did they come in 97? I can't remember, but whenever they came back, when we, earlier in our Retro Raw journey, I think the Legion of Doom were awesome for a while. And then the whole LOD 2000 thing, I don't think they were like as terrible as everyone says they were, but like it wasn't great and it didn't really work. And teasing all of the dissension between Hawk and Animal was never a great thing. And now they're just back together, like because Paul Ellering got sad when he thought Hawk was dead or whatever. So now they're just pals again. I don't know. It's weird. And having the Stooges get beaten up was funny. And I guess there's a logical reason because, they were upset that they were mocked so fiercely last week by Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe, and the coffee trope makes an appearance again, but I can't say that I was clamoring for the return of Legion of Doom with Paul Ellering. I just don't know what they have left to do here.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things because the last time we saw them was last year when they were brawling with each other. They had that whole thing. They had the whole thing with draws.
Yeah, because Draws was all involved.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a real kind of sad endpoint for LOD. So then we move on though. We get the Blue Meanie coming out. He's coming out with a chair. He calls it Shamrock. But the Shamrock he's calling it is Ryan, not Ken. The Blue Meanie proceeds to grab her and try to spank her. This leads Ken Shamrock to come out, only to be attacked by Goldust. The Blue Meanie hits him in the back with a chair after Ken puts Goldust in the ankle lock. What?
Did you notice the Blue Meanie's shirt?
No, what did it say?
Mother and son, or something like that? It was a picture of Goldust
Yeah, because Goldust is his mummy.
being like the mother, and then the Blue Meanie with like a bonnet on, holding Goldust's hand as the child.
Yeah, because remember I told you that Goldust gave birth to him
Oh,
metaphorically and.
I remember. I remember this happening. I listened to you and Finn discuss it on Retro Heat. I'm just saying, Blue Meanie is fully committed and has an airbrushed shirt about Goldust being his mother. And I find all of this to be strange. Like, does that make Ryan Shamrock like his stepmom? And then he wants to spank her?
You know how some things are explainable and sometimes like sometimes people just take drugs and
Feel like
things
this is one of
happen.
those drug situations. This is whole, oh, it's so terrible, right? Like Blue Meanie calling out Ryan Shamrock and being like, I'm gonna spank you. And then she just comes out. Like, why is Ryan Shamrock such a prop? Like, it really, really irks me. Everything having to do with Ryan Shamrock just really bothers me so much because she's just such a prop to be passed around. And no one has asked her her motivation. No one has asked her what she wanted. No one has asked her why she's there. No one has asked her how she feels about her brother being kind of a creep to her, right? Like, Ken Shamrock is ridiculous. And I mean, I understand why Ken Shamrock doesn't necessarily want his sister to get spanked, but like, why is she coming out and being like, okay, I'll just get spanked by the Blue Meanie now? This is, oh, it's all so ridiculous. And she's just so not like a human person. She's just such a sex bot for these people. And it's so gross.
It's pretty horrendous, to be fair. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I'm not even going to try and make sense. But I'm just going to go back to my happy place, which is Jim Ross at a frat party having a great time. Jim Ross is just having a good time, Sondra, at the
He's
frat
having
party.
a good time and providing analysis and commentary on the show. Did you notice how Jim Ross was like summarizing certain events on the show and saying what he was looking forward to? And he was actually building anticipation for the show, like
From a
better
frat
than
party.
from a frat party. Like, he just can't help but like sell and build anticipation for a show and do it very well. Like, again, this was not heel behavior. So I am, in my mind, thinking that this whole heel JR experiment is done because they're doing everything here to make him likable. He's just hanging out with a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, like I feel like I'm like, all you're doing is making people want JR to be in commentary more. Like that's all you're doing
That's
here.
really all it is, yeah.
He also blames Hardcore Holly for taking him off the air last week and asks Asks the frat where the girls are. Oh,
Yes, he
God.
does do that. I love the idea that Jim Ross is like, it is hardcore Holly's fault that I'm not on Raw this week because he broke my announce table. Like JR needs a full announce table to be able to try to worm his way in on commentary. Like he tried to get on commentary before and they just like made him go away. So I don't know. The whole thing is just really funny.
It's a whole thing. Then we get Sable getting her makeup done because she's coming up soon. The Ministry of Darkness arrive at the arena. Nothing happens though, so I don't know. Like Vince had said, when Undertaker arrives, we will film it, I guess, is the message.
That happened. I mean, they definitely do arrive. And Sable getting her makeup done kind of cracked me up because she like is brushing her own hair. And I was like, wow, what a lady of the people brushing her own hair.
She's getting her makeup ready, and I'm like, she's supposed to be this like sexy woman in the 90s, and she just kind of looks like Bette Davis as Baby Jane.
My favorite part is when she like looks at her nails because she's trying to do things to like look like she's full of herself, right? So her nails, which she has not just gotten done, she's like looking at them. And like blowing on them as though they're wet, but they are not wet because then she buffs her nails as well, like on her shirt. But I'm like, why were you blowing on them so much before you're wiping them out? And none of this makes sense. Sable's just so bad at everything.
Do you think you'll miss her when she's gone?
No.
Was kind of hoping that was going to be. was kind of hoping there was more to that, but no, there's not. It's just
No,
no.
just
It's just no.
I do not believe that I will miss her. I think that it will be a happy day when Sable is no longer a part of Retro Raw, because I think she brings down all the segments that she's in for me, and it sucks because I think she was a very effective performer at first. I think when they were really, accentuating her strengths and hiding some of her weaknesses, and like that mixed tag match with Luna and Goldust and Mark Miro was fantastic. I actually was kind of a Sable fan at first, but now the experiment has not worked.
So Sable is gonna. So Vince McMahon demanded to know where the coffee is from the Stooges.
He's very, it's like, well, because the Stooges, like, Pat Patterson just has his head in his hands. And Gerald Briscoe's like, I mean, Mr. McMahon, we got attacked. And this is like, where's my coffee? He's like, I got sprayed with beer. He's in a state, of course, over the whole beer situation and the whole Austin situation. And he has no idea that that Briscoe and Patterson have even been attacked. So he's just really not looking after his Stooges, Kenny.
Can't Vince just get a little Americano just to make himself feel better after being drenched in like that putrid, poor quality beer?
I know it's true. But I mean, to be fair, the Stooges have been through quite a bit themselves, being attacked by Legion of Doom. They attempted to get the coffee. Blame Hawk and
I
Animal.
mean, Pat Patterson has been attempting to get coffee for about 6 months.
It's true. Well, they did deliver the coffee at one point. I think there was one time that Vince actually got the coffee from them.
It's the best story.
It's my favorite thing. I didn't expect to like love the coffee trope as much as I do, but it's my favorite.
Sable gets her chin up for WrestleMania against Ivory. PMS come out when the match gets going, and they're kind of in an altercation, a verbal altercation with D'Lo, who's with Ivory. So the thing is, like, Ivory obviously goes on to be, and she is a fairly good wrestler. You do not see that here, for whatever reason.
You do not see that here, but I don't know that that's entirely on Ivory.
I mean, they were both really bad here. So I counted it,
This was
and
awful.
there was like a botched sunset flip. There was botched roll ups.
It
Ivory.
took Sable 3 times to lift up Ivory for the Sable Bomb.
Yeah, and the thing is, like Sable, like I'm trying to give Sable a little bit of credit here, which I know we don't do too often. But like one thing that Sable has been able to do every single time with no issue is get people up for a Sable bomb. Like Mark Mero, like Jacqueline, like she can do that. So I'm like, did they just not have time to like rehearse this or see it through or something, or were they just not used to working with each other? But anyway, Sable ends up hitting the Sable bomb eventually for the win, and then Tori runs down and then fights with Sable. So I mean, I guess my question to you is, how excited did this get you for the culmination of a year's worth of story with Sable defending her WWF Women's Championship at WrestleMania against Tori?
Oh gosh. Like, if there ever wasn't a WrestleMania caliber match, that's it. This was atrocious. This was dog shit. This bothered me a lot more than I think it probably should have, because I shouldn't expect more from the women's division on Retro Raw right now. But this was just so horrendous. Like, there were Ivory wasn't great in this match either. That's true, right? But you could see that Ivory is a competent professional wrestler. There were things that she was doing where she had to basically wrestle around Sable. And if Ivory's not that great yet to begin with, like herself, then I mean, what even are they doing here? You're right that there were like completely botched spots. I mean, Sable, all Sable does at this point, she has started her catchphrase. I think this is the debut of her, "For all the women who want to be me and the men who want to see me" thing that she does that I've heard before and seen clips of and whatnot, where she just like gyrates her hips and tries to act like she's sexy, and she's very bad at even doing that, and she just kind of dances the whole time. And I don't know, to see Ivory having to sell for Sable in this match when Sable was just gyrating at her the whole time, it was just a big bummer, because Ivory like had to just lie on the ground for a long time and pretend like she was so hurt from Sable kicking her in the corner, or the Sable bomb that took 3 times to set up. Like, Ivory's just sitting there with her head between Sable's legs like, okay, this is happening. I mean, part of that's probably on Ivory too, like if she didn't jump properly or whatever, but it's, I don't know, this whole thing was just terrible. And I mean, D'Lo on commentary was fun. I have no idea why PMS are even out there to talk to them. D'Lo called Terry a $2 slutty whore or something like that. Not real big fans of that. And then Tori, when Tori comes out at the end, could anyone look more wooden than Sable? I think we found our answer. I think the answer is Tori. Like, when she gets on Sable to try and punch her, like the rigidity with which she like cocks back her arm and then like hits Sable, it's almost like a robot that's gotten stuck and needs oil or something like that. She can't move with any sort of fluid motion. I mean, at least Sable can gyrate her hips and look like a human. Tori's like almost worse. So, no, Kenny, in answer to your question, I am not excited about Sable versus Tori at WrestleMania. I do not anticipate it being a very high quality matchup.
Well, do you know what? You might feel that way, but I actually care about women's wrestling, and I think the women deserve to be on the show. So, you can take your opinions and just take them somewhere else, because I'm looking forward to the glory of Tori wearing her full leopard skin outfit, which does not show an inch of her body.
Oh boy.
One of the worst outfits you're ever going to see in your life.
You know what? Now I'm a little bit more excited for the match just to see this outfit,
It's so
because
bad.
I'm curious. Like, I'm here for a bad outfit. I really am.
Well, you're
But no,
going to
it's
get
just
one.
it's a sh it's a shame that the women's division on Retro Raw is this poor, right? Because I mean, you could have a women's match on WrestleMania. If, say you did Ivory versus Jacqueline, and I know we saw that match on Heat, and it wasn't like a barn burner, but it was good. Like, it was fine. They are competent professional wrestlers. If you gave those women a story and an avenue to tell that story, I'm sure they could do something pretty decent at WrestleMania. But Sable versus Tori, my goodness, what a waste.
It's, I mean, it's not gonna. Meltzer's not gonna be given all the stars out for it. We see Steve
Does it
Austin.
get negative stars?
I think it does.
Ha ha.
I think it gets dud. We'll see.
Okay.
Steve Austin's preparing for the main event. So then we get Mankind versus The Rock, where the winner gets to be the referee for the main event. So it's funny. Like, we've seen these guys like having this like huge feud, like empty arena matches, I quits. And now they're just brawling on Raw for like a couple of minutes. There's a ref bump which prevents both of them from getting a victory, but the referee recovers in time to see the Big Show choke slamming Mankind, and that allows Mankind to get the win and go on to be the referee for the main event. Big Show's raging, he ends up throwing things around backstage. I mean, I've got to question though, Big Show, why did you think it was a good idea to come out during the match that's going to determine who the referee is for the main event and beat up the guy that you don't want to be the referee, because maybe the referee might see it and disqualify him? So I think Big Show kind of dug his own grave here. What do you think?
I mean, Big Show definitely dug his own grave, but maybe Big Show was watching the tag match earlier on in the night and thought, Tim White's the referee. I'm golden. It doesn't matter what happens here, right? Because Tim White's not going to disqualify anyone. It's Tim White. He didn't even end the tag title match earlier on when a man who wasn't in the match started wrestling in the match for no reason. So maybe Big Show just got overconfident in the lack of refereeing skill of Tim White, and that's what he was thinking. Or alternate theory, Paul White was essentially asleep backstage and doesn't really know what's going on and doesn't really care.
I mean, all valid theories, I think.
I mean, there is a moment in this match too where Mankind grabs a chair, right, to go after the Rock, and he's like hitting the Rock with a chair and whatnot. Like, or was that in this match or was that in the main event? No, I can't remember. That might have been
The
in the main
chair was the main
event.
event, yeah.
The chair was the main event, but like, I mean, the refereeing on this show is just atrocious. I
How
can't handle it. Like, it hurts my brain.
is this still like how is this still like not in your brain that this is what happens?
I know that it's what happens, but I don't have to like it.
I know, but I thought it'd be like Stockholm Syndrome where you finally just get used to it.
No, I'm not used to it. It's terrible every time.
The next match we're supposed to have is Kane versus Goldust, but once Goldust gets to, now that I want to say again, this was also cut from the Sky Sports version of Raw that we got in 1999. Didn't get to see this.
This?
Yep.
Well, because of the fire.
Yep.
What?
No
Like, I
idea.
understand Sky Sports cutting like the human sacrifice, like the Midian thing. Like, I understand if maybe they're like, okay, so satanic cult blood sacrifice worship things, maybe that's too much for Sky Sports, but I don't understand the fire thing if they're going to show the Inferno match.
I know. It doesn't really make any sense. But anyway, so we basically get Kane versus Goldust, what we're supposed to get. Once Goldust gets to the ring, he pulls a bazooka out of his robe and blasts Kane in the face. Goldust then takes off the robe and the wig, and it's Triple H. Big pop from the crowd. It was quite a clever reveal, I'll give him that. And in terms of building the match, I think they've done some kind of fun, different stuff with the Kane and Triple H stuff that I think has kind of worked quite well and made it stand out a little bit from the other matches they're building at WrestleMania. What do you think?
I think it was fine. I mean, it's Triple H. He's not my favorite, but I think the reveal was quite good. I didn't see it coming. I did not realize that. Did you realize that it wasn't Goldust until the fireball?
I mean, well, it was spoiled for me when I initially saw it, so I knew already. But like, yeah,
Okay.
if I hadn't have seen it, I wouldn't have known. I would have had no
Because I
idea.
don't think it was immediately obvious that it wasn't Goldust. And I mean, like, I can't say that when I watch Retro Raw, I'm like watching it completely, like in rapt attention and paying attention to every detail. But I was watching the show, and it didn't occur to me that it wasn't Goldust. It's Goldust music. They have kind of faraway camera shots. I think it was very cleverly produced in that way. And with Goldust's like frame rate in his entrance being kind of different anyway, it's probably easier to hide that. And they didn't really like show a close up of his face. So yeah, I thought that was really well done. I think it was surprising when a fire happened and Kane got burned. I mean, it's nice because Kane has the mask and everything, so he's like clutching his face as though he's been burned, but it's like you also do have a leather mask that protects you, so I think you're going to be okay, and you've been through worse fires before. So but yeah, I mean, it was fine. I can't say that like Kane versus Triple H is the thing that I'm most excited about, but I think the storytelling is pretty good here, and I think it's weird that on commentary Jerry Lawler's like accusing Kane of just being like a lovesick puppy because he cares about China. Like, he cares about another human being. Gasp. How dare he?
I mean, caring about another human is not something that you would think you're going to get on Retro Raw. You would think
True.
that it's a.
But it does make Kane the more likable character here for me. Like, I know that Triple H attacked Kane with fire because the fireball that hit China was meant for Triple H, and now he's upset and he's raging because he could have gotten hit with fire or whatever. But, you know, I mean, it's fun to continue the feud, but Kane seems like the more sympathetic character here.
So we will see how that goes this Sunday, or well, it's Sunday right now. I'm just playing along with the time frame. Anyway, X-Pac shows up for a street fight with Shane McMahon, but after he gets the upper hand, the Mean Street Posse immediately run out and beat up X-Pac. It is their debut. The Posse and Shane then get into their cars and leave before X-Pac can get his revenge. Was the debut of the Mean Street Posse everything that you wanted it to be?
It was incredible. They drove up in a Corvette. They beat up X-Pac. They were wearing, you know, collared shirts and sweater vests. They are everything I want them to be. There are more of them here than they're going to be, because I think that Willie Green and Billy P were also a part of the Mean Street Posse here. At least they said that they were. I love it. I love the Mean Street Posse. I think they're pricks. I think they are so entitled. And I mean, they basically are calling back to, you know, those times that they just like created havoc on the mean streets of Greenwich, right? So calling this a Greenwich street fight, not really giving us much, making you want to see the match between X-Pac and Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. I think it did a good job of that because yeah, the Mean Street Posse are horrendous, right? Like, they are horrible, horrible humans who they're the most entitled person. I think it's funny that the Mean Street Posse debut on the same episode as there's a frat party. Like, the Mean Street Posse kind of feel like they belong at the frat party a lot more than JR would. But yeah, I'm so excited about the Mean Street Posse. I can't. I can't lie.
More of them at WrestleMania. Vince McMahon walks out, he replays the
Is
opening.
WrestleMania, is it just a singles match between Shane and X-Pac, or does it turn into a street fight?
It is a singles match. I'm sure it ends up being like there's no, I think it is just a singles match.
Okay.
I'm just looking here. Yes, it is just a singles match.
Is Tim White refereeing? Because then the Mean Street Posse could all wrestle, right? And it would just be totally fine.
I don't know who's refereeing. I can't remember that. But that'll be another thing for us to look forward to at WrestleMania. What is Tori wearing? The Mean Street Posse turning up. Who's refereeing the match? Anyway, so
All sorts of intrigue.
Vince walks out, replays the opening segment for the crowd. He promises Steve Austin that he will not enjoy his experience in the main event and that there is no chance in hell that Steve Austin will win the WWF Championship at WrestleMania.
I
Which
mean, you
leads.
have to call attention to the fact that Vince McMahon is wearing a very large suit coat over very large trousers and no shirt.
He's lost the shirt, got lost on the opening segment, and Vince is just like not even like acknowledging it. He's just
No,
like,
he did. I think he called attention to it. He was like, "You may wonder why I'm dressed like this." And then that's when he shows the video package. Like, I think he calls attention to the fact that he's wearing something that he was not wearing before because of the dastardly shenanigans of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
yeah. So, but I mean, it's Vince. It's the best. So this leads us to the main event. The Rock is brought out by Vince as the guest commentator to make up for the fact that he's not refereeing the main event. We get the first theme of the big show. It's
It's, I
not.
mean, I think we heard it last week. It's so generic.
Oh, it's
Like, it
terrible.
is so generic and terrible. Can we even find that theme? Does it even exist online?
We will either find it or we'll play the raw version of it. We'll play some form of it to play us out.
Okay,
So.
because the people need to know, Kenny. And in case they didn't watch this episode of Retro Raw, they need to know just how horrendous and how fitting that theme is for the Big Show, because he is horrendous as well. And should never wear trunks. Can we agree on this?
Yes, he should never ever wear trunks. It just.
Which he has chosen to do on this episode.
So
It's not a great look.
Michael Cole builds this as the biggest match in the history of Monday Night Raw. It's a pretty interesting match to watch because like we've never really seen Austin against a guy of this size. And you know, like I say, I know that Big Show does not look super motivated. And I know that he is not as good as he should be, but like this just felt like a match that should have been saved for a bigger platform. It really did. It felt like a match that we shouldn't be seeing straight away. And I remember watching it at the time and kind of being like, okay, well, this is really cool that we're seeing it. Maybe we're going to get like a non-finish and whatever. And then Austin just starts rattling Big Show with the chair and Stunner. And that's it. One, two,
And
three.
why was Austin allowed to use a chair in this match?
Because Mankind's the referee and Mankind was not going to adhere to the full rules, given that the
See,
corporation
again,
have.
like Mankind's going to that Tim White school of refereeing, and it's just not good. He needs to learn
Well,
from better mentors.
I think it's more that Mankind had his title taken from him because of the Big Show and
That's true.
has decided, you know what, I'm maybe going to be a bit more lenient. I'm going to let Steve Austin have a couple of chair shots because you came out and flung me off a ladder when I'd done nothing to you.
I mean, that motivation does make sense. I think I would have preferred if Mankind like turned around like intentionally when he saw Steve Austin get a chair, if he would have like pretended to need to go to look at something in the crowd or like needed to attend to something and like made it more obvious that he was allowing Steve Austin to do this kind of thing. Because obviously like Austin in the match as well does undo the turnbuckle pad and then, you know, of course gets hit into the turnbuckle himself for his trouble, but does not get pinned by the Big Show. So I think I would have liked it to be a little bit more shenanigans from Mankind as a referee if that was supposed to be the goal. Because Mankind just kind of stands there, right? Like he just kind of stands there and watches and is like, okay, whatever. So that part of it didn't really work for me. And the Big Show's terrible here. Like I really, the thing is, I love Big Show as a performer. So to be like railing on him so much on these episodes kind of hurts because I really like him as a performer. And I kind of like miss him nowadays, like on current Raw. I don't think that he should necessarily be back because I don't think that that would work. But like remember when he was with the bar and it was great? Like I think the Big Show can be a great performer and this is just not showing us that at all. It's so full of just like plodding around, standing around. Austin's great in this match. Like this is we don't get to see Steve Austin wrestle very much and this match kind of reminded me how good he still is, even with his injury and with his limitations, like running the ropes and bumping for Big Show and all the stuff that Austin's doing in this match. I think he looked very good. But Big Show, like, I mean, there's a moment where I think it's after Austin hits his head off the turnbuckle Big Show just like stands there for a good like 5, 10 seconds and then drops an elbow on Austin and then sort of lazily covers him. And of course, Austin kicks out because it took you fucking forever to do anything about this. Like, why didn't you go for a cover? You want to beat Steve Austin. Like, you're just being stupid. Everything the Big Show does just makes him look like an idiot here, right? Like, choke slamming Mankind earlier in the match, that ensured that Mankind was going to be the special guest referee here. Like, none of this makes sense if you're supposed to be like an intelligent individual and someone who really wants to win and get ahead in this company. It seems like Big Show's just kind of there and he does not look happy about it. And I don't know, like, I'm really not enjoying him on Retro Raw right now. And so, yeah, it's baffling that they gave this match away. And it's baffling that Steve Austin just pinned the Big Show and essentially ensured that he was never gonna like be a as big a deal as he could have been, right, in the company, even with his lack of motivation and whatnot. They could have still made him look like a much bigger star. But I think some of that might be on Big Show. And I don't know, it's just on a show with so many non-finishes and on a show that's known for so many non-finishes, to have a clean finish to this one is kind of a weird decision. But you'd think that here you could just do more shenanigans and melee because that's what they do for every single other match, it seems, a lot of the time. And I don't know, like, it just didn't really work.
I think that the I think it was kind of like on a it was like a weird enough experiment. It was seeing Austin and Big Show together was new. You know, Austin's not had a fresh opponent in a long time, so that was good to see. Big Show's new enough in the company that it felt fresh. We're just leading into WrestleMania. I think for me it worked in terms of like the crowd was really into it and all that kind of stuff. The finish is really what I have the issue with because I just don't understand it. I just think if you're trying to make money, what's the point? It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, after the match, we get Austin getting beat up by The Rock. He gives him a rock bottom, and the show comes to a close. So that's us kind of now. The build is done for WrestleMania. We go to it on Sunday. WrestleMania 15 is not looked back on as a great WrestleMania at all. So it'll be interesting to see how you feel about it, Sandra. But what about the
I mean,
go-homes?
I've heard that it's bad, and so it's almost kind of good because I'm going into it with very low expectations. And sometimes when I go into shows with very low expectations, I don't hate them as much, even if they are terrible. So that's positive.
Where would your thumb be for the go home show in terms, I guess, of them executing the programs and the matches that they have booked? Even if you don't agree with the matches that they booked, how did they do in terms of getting you intrigued or invested in watching WrestleMania, I guess?
I'm gonna go thumbs in the middle for this one because I think some of the main event stuff was really good. I think that Austin was great on this show, and the fact that I haven't been that invested in Austin and now I'm more invested in Austin, I think that is a major plus for the show. The Ivory Sable thing I just hated. The Ryan Shamrock Goldust Blumini debacle I don't understand. I think the Stooges are brilliant. I think Vince selling the threat of Austin and the shenanigans of Austin, I think, was actually quite good throughout the show. Again, I like that there's the counter of Shawn Michaels out there. Mankind is just so adorable that even though his quest to be referee doesn't make any sense to me, I really like him. And a lot of the other stuff wasn't like terrible. It just was kind of there, I guess. Like the tag team stuff was kind of terrible. So I'm like almost talking myself into a thumbs down. But I will say thumbs in the middle because I wasn't like bored during a bunch of it.
I'm gonna go with thumbs up. I think that even though there was a lot of dross in the kind of middle and stuff like that, I think that all the main event stuff kind of was interesting enough to work. I mean, I hate the finish, but I'm trying to not let that be my one memory. JR going to a frat party is just
That
my
was brilliant.
everything. It's just my
And did we
absolute
even
everything.
talk about Dr. Death and Bob Holly doing their like hardcore match in the frat house?
No, we didn't. So yeah, let's so we. Thoughts on that? Thoughts on Bob Holly and Dr. Death doing a
I
match?
just love the idea. I love the idea that Hardcore Holly is so upset that he feels like he lost his hardcore title because of JR, right? Because if JR wouldn't have built that announce table out there on Retro Raw, then Bob Holly would still be hardcore champion in his mind, right? It would not be Billy Gunn at this point. So Hardcore Holly apparently must have seen on the monitor or seen on television that JR was at this frat house party. And Michael Cole, the whole entire time, is like, he's at this house, he's at this house, he's in Albany, he's at this house. So you know where he is. Like, if you know the surrounding area, which I don't, like, I have no idea where this is, but I'm sure that it wouldn't be that hard to find. So Hardcore Holly shows up to confront Dr. Death Steve Williams over the whole JR situation, and they just start having a hardcore match throughout the frat house. Like, Bob Holly starts beating up Dr. Death Steve Williams. Dr. Death, like, is beating up Bob Holly. They go into a kitchen. They knock over a stovetop. Like, I'm sure one of them gets slammed into a fridge at one point. The whole thing is just bonkers. And then the frat guys are in the next room, right? Because they can't fight in the middle of the frat guys because someone's probably going to get hurt. But the frat guys are in the next room, like next to the staircase, just cheering this all on. They're so excited that this hardcore match is happening. And Michael Cole at one point, he's like, they're having a hardcore match here. And it's like, there's no referee. It's not like this is actually a proper match, but it's bonkers and it's shenanigans. And I loved it. Like, I actually really loved Hardcore Holly and Dr. Death Steve Williams just fighting in a frat house as JR's like, what the fuck?
It was brilliant. This is the downfall. I have a really good website that I go to. I'm not going to give away because I want people to do it with me. But like, there's a website where I have like a review and results thing to go in my notes, so I don't need to write down every match in every order, and I can just kind of go through that way. And it didn't bring up the Bob Holly, Dr. Death thing. So
They missed out because I thought that segment was brilliant.
it was great. So do join us on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes for our WrestleMania review when we're bringing in Finn Martin this coming Thursday, hopefully. But this week, and then Sondra. Now this is the thing. I want to put this out there. This was not even my idea. Sondra wanted to do more retro content, so we are going to sit down this week and we're going to cover the WrestleMania Rage Party.
I'm so excited. Like, I'm so excited. It's probably not going to be a very long review, but oh my gosh. Like, if you haven't seen the whole
I've
thing, it
never seen
is
it, so.
atrocious. Like, it is so bad. I'm the most excited. I love the Rage Party. I think it's hilarious that it happened. I think it's funny that it's called the Rage Party. I think it's hilarious that WrestleMania is called the Rage and Climax because it's edgy, because it's like a sexy joke. All of this is just such a dumpster fire, and sometimes I'm here for it.
What are the plugs, Sandra?
You can find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Like we mentioned, Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of bonus content going up there. I'm actually looking forward to the WrestleMania review with Finn. I'm curious to see how that's going to go because I've never seen WrestleMania 15. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content, videos going up all the time on YouTube. And I believe that is all for now.
That is it for now. So to play us out, let's just play the music of Stone Cold Steve Austin because he is the number one contender for the
I thought we
WWF
were going to
champ.
find the Big Show theme.
Oh yes, we are. Sorry, I'll find the Big Show theme. We'll play Big Show's awful first theme instead, and join us on Patreon for WrestleMania with Finn, me, and Sondra. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.